Evening, Rick B. from San Diego.
Good evening, class. Welcome if you're new. Happy birthday if you're having a birthday. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Rick. I wear a coat and tie to the meeting. Fucking shit's over with. I tell you right now. Christ. Jesus. You got to be kidding. I'm afraid not to wear it. You know, so, okay, I wear the tie. It's kind of like getting sober. Fear will get you that way. It just won't keep you that way. So I wore the tie. Now it's history. My sobriety date's the 21st of March, 1975. I don't keep count, but if I did, I just had my 40th sober birthday. It's a long 40 years. Miserable 40. I'm just kidding. It's just a joke. I'm going to pay for that one. People know me. They always get a little nervous when I talk because they have no idea what I'm going to say. And I don't either. But I will tell you this, that my first thing is I know that the way I was taught AA and the way I do AA is in, it's not so much different as it is in direct conflict with what goes on now, so if I say something that hurts your feelings or pisses you off, it's not intentional. I don't think. My very first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous was September 6th of 1971. I was at that meeting because of a lot of bad luck, misunderstanding, a lousy attorney, the judge fucked me in 60 UIs. It's a true story. I got these 6 drunk driving tickets in 6 weeks. I had 2 in 1 day. I had 3 in 2 days. And the interesting part is it was all by the same cop. And this guy's not as true. He was a stalker. And I got the secret thing about that. The other interesting part about that is I did not own a car. I don't know why to this day I just think that's so cool. Yeah, whose car was it? I have no idea. I really don't have a lot of memory, and the other stuff, I got it all on paperwork. You know, I had some military vehicles, a couple of military trucks, and, you know, a military Jeep. I don't know where that came from, and, you know, I don't know. But anyway, I'd gone on a little toot that summer, and the reason I'd just come back, I just finished my second hitch in Nam, and I'd come back to the States, and I'd gone home. I was raised back east and down south, a place called Scottsboro, Alabama. I've never been to Scottsboro, Alabama. It's 1863 in Scottsboro, Alabama. Let's put it that way. And there's about 1,200 people in that town. I'm related to about 60% of them. And our family tree is like a stick. You know, it just... It's pretty ugly. If you ever seen that movie Deliverance, you understand it. But that's my family. A lot of them. So it's kind of embarrassing, but it's the truth. But anyway, I'd gone home to visit mainly my mother, and I go home and knock on the front door, and she'll, "Oh, hi, how you doing?" So I go in, and I remember my mom went into big things coffee. I always drink coffee at home, and. She went to go get some coffee, and I went in the living room and sat down across from my father, and he's 9 feet away from me, and before I even got the word hello out of my lips, he pulled out a gun and killed himself. And I learned the hard way that it is the ultimate fuck you, without a doubt. But anyway... I have 6 brothers. I was raised with, you know, 7 boys, no girls. And the other interesting part, we're all left-handed. He wasn't a control freak at all. But I don't have a... I don't come from an alcoholic home. My father was not an alcoholic. My mother, none of my brothers are. I don't have any aunts or uncles or grandparents or cousins. I have none of that history in my family. None. And I've looked high and low, believe me, to blame it on somebody, but It's just not there. But the family that I grew up in was a military family. My father did 34 years in the military. He was a World War II veteran. He was a prisoner of war for 3 years. He was a very well-respected man in that regard, but he was also a rager. He broke my arm, broke most of my ribs, shattered my cheekbone, broke my jaw, broke my nose half a dozen times. This is the kind of environment I was raised in. So when I went in the military, I can tell you that he did that to me, but I can also tell you that this man was a war hero. He spent 3 years as a POW. It doesn't excuse what he did to me, but it explains a lot of it. I didn't know it at the time, and I didn't understand it, but I do now. I am not a victim. So if you're new tonight, you're not a victim. When I went in the military in 1967, I was primed and ready. At that first meeting, I walked up the steps of a place called Pathfinders. And I was just fortunate enough or unfortunate enough to run into a gentleman whose name is John LaFontaine. A lot of you folks know who John is. And he's the greatest man I've ever known, drunk or sober. That's true. And he introduced himself and asked me who I was. You know, John, we started giving him 20 questions, started drilling in. He asked me what my problem was, and I said that I was sent here by the courts, and you have a drinking problem? I go, well, I'm not so sure about that, but I'd never heard AA. I'd never had anybody ever tell me I had a problem drinking until this time, and I told him, I said, there's some days, John, when I drink and I can control it, and nothing happens to me. I said, there's other days when I drink and I can't control it, and all kinds of crazy shit happens. And him and all his wisdom, he said, just drink on the days you can control it, Rick. he obviously didn't understand. But I left that meeting and did exactly what he told me to do for the next 4 years. I've heard it said that if you don't remember your last drunk, you haven't had it yet. Whoever tells you that is an idiot. Really, I don't remember my last drunk. I remember my last drink, and it was, remember it was raining. I had on a pair of shorts, a couple of flip-flops that didn't match, no shirt, got in Lemon Grove, and how I got there, I have no idea. I was living in Balboa Park, and, it is an upscale park, by the way. I do have my boundaries, you know. But I walked in. There used to be a Mayfair supermarket out there. People remember that big round staunching poles that held it up. And I walked inside this Mayfair supermarket, and I'm looking for something to boost. And so I walked in, there was this display like in a pyramid of this Wesson oil. And I'm like, cooking oil? And I just looked like, when they talk about lower companions, by the way, I'm the one they found. I'm that guy. So I took a bottle of Wesson oil, stuck it in my britches, walked out the door, went around the corner, and I popped the cap off this Wesson oil bottle and pulled some hair out of my head, stuck it in the Wesson oil bottle, stuck the cap back on, come around the corner, walked back in demanding to see the manager. And I don't know if the guy was a manager or not. Some poor sap walked up to me, and he gave me that pathetic, disgusted look that most people give, if you look like I did. And I look at this. There's hair in my Wesson oil. And he's all, he gives you that, shaking their head. And I remember he reached in his pocket and gave me a bunch of chump change and took the Wesson oil. And I went out the door and went down the street there to a little pharmacy and bought me a little 59-cent bottle of rubbing alcohol. Went around the corner, popped the cap, had a few pops of his rubbing alcohol. And when I came to, it was 7 weeks later. I was in a veterans hospital up in La Jolla, and I'd been in a coma for 16 days. When I came to, I was literally strapped down in a stainless steel thing, and you come to and that, it's kind of like having a bad hair day, and they proceeded to tell me where I was at and what was going on. And from my first drink to the last one, was not fun. And I had a lot of good times, like she was. I had a lot of good times drinking. I don't remember most of them, but I had a good time. I was not a social drinker. I never drank in bars. I never went to the last party I went to sometime in 71, 72. I burned his house to the ground. I was that kind of guy. And so anyway, I checked out of there on the 21st of March of 1975. A guy named Jim Williams picked me up and took me to Pathfinders, of all places. If I remember the first meeting, I remember the only thing I remember sitting there, and the guy walked up there and he says, and this is so true, if you think you're too young to be an alcoholic, you are. And if you think you're too smart to be an alcoholic, you are. And if you think you're too tough to be an alcoholic, you are. And we cannot help you, and I will be here if and when you ever get wrecked. Strike three, I'm out of here. And that's what I heard. That day I went back to Pathfinders. A guy named Kenny Creightley had been running it back then for many, many years. Some of you know him. And he'd always told me through the years that if I ever sobered up, he'd let me stay there. And I'm sober now. And I remember he called me in the office, and he sat me down. He starts talking to me, blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, are you going to let me stay here? He goes, no, Rick, I'm not. I go, you're kidding. He goes, no. I said, why? He says, because you're too sick, and you're too complicated, and you scare me. He gives me a big book of 12 and 12 and a mini schedule. He sent me out the door. I hooked the right, went four blocks to Balboa Park. That's where I lived my first year and a half sober, was in Balboa Park. And this is what happened. She said it. It wasn't my problems that were killing me. It was my solutions. It took me a while to learn that. I didn't learn it until after I sobered up. I went to three meetings a day. I had a lot of chalk. I had a gun stuck in my back. And people tell you, been around a while, I got in a lot of fights in AA, fisticuffs, in the meeting, before the meeting, after the meeting. I had a lot of people throw me out of their meetings sober. And I was very, very, very aggressive. And when I was 4 months sober, I got in a gunfight out in Spring Valley. It wasn't even my beef. I shot two people. And I didn't kill them, but I shot them. And when I was 7 months sober, I got in a fight at Pathfinders. And I broke the podium at that meeting hall. And they threw me out of Pathfinders. And Kenny said he wouldn't let me come back until I paid to have a new podium. That podium that's at Pathfinders now, I paid to have built. And the way I had it paid for is I went out to La Mesa Lemon Grove, and I robbed a Security Civic National Bank. That's what I was doing sober. Other than that, I surrendered and trusted God and all that good shit, you know. I try to tell folks, my first couple of years in AA were just worse than most people drinking. It was just a freaking nightmare. When I had no God, I had no faith, I had no hope, I was stark raving sober. The longer I went without drinking, the more meetings I went to, the crazier I got, the sicker I got, the worse I got. And I had no solution for it. The only solution I had was what I came to AA with, and it was killing me. Finally, the 21st of March, 1976, I stood at that podium, and I got a year kick. John gave it to me. And I remember he came up, and I blew the candle out, he sits down, he says a few words, he goes and sits down, I started to cry. And I just bolted for the door, I took off. I did not want anybody to ever see me like that. And they chased me down, he said, what's going on? I told him what was going on. And he said, you know what? And yelling at John, it's young man. He always said, young man. Whenever he talked to me, I always felt like I was 3 years old. He's looking over his freaking glasses, just like I do to people now. And he says, your pride will kill you before booze, Rick. And he says, here's your problem. And he read this to me, and I'll never forget it as long as I live. It's as true today as it was then. He says, this is your problem, Rick. You have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. I've never seen one single case recover where that state of mind existed to the extent that it does in you. That's your problem. You're thinking, Rick. What part of it? All of it. He says, everything up there on that wall is written in somebody else's blood. Somebody died for that to be true. Either you're in or you're out. Either you're in the plane or on the plane. Alcoholics Anonymous is for people who want it. It is not for people who need it. You desperately need it. Do you want it? Are you willing to go to any length to do this? And he said something that really stuck with me. If just being sober in and of itself, Rick, is not good enough for you, you're in the wrong program. And I learned over the years, that's the truth. Just being sober is good enough for me. It's not all of it. It's not all that I want. It's not all that I need. It's not all that I've done. But that in and of itself has always been good enough for me. And if you're new tonight, it was not good enough for you, you're in the wrong program. She said it. That's what AA offers you, sobriety. The rest of it, bells and whistles. He sat me down with a book and a notebook. He said, are you an alcoholic, Rick? Now I'm sober 14 months. Of course I'm, I got this fraud, of course, you know. I'll go to meetings, I raise, that don't make you an alcoholic, maybe just stupid. And it wasn't so much that I couldn't answer him. I didn't know what an alcoholic, I had no idea what an alcoholic. I've been through six treatment centers, you know. I've been a lot of nut wards, all that kind of stuff. And I had no idea what this thing was about. None. And he says, you know what the word admit, Rick? No, I don't. I mean, I thought I did. He says, you know what? If I knock on this door and you open and you let me in, that's admitting me. It's an inside job. We concede to our innermost self that we're a real alcoholic. And I thought that I had a choice in this thing. I thought that every time that I drank because I chose to drink. That was the lie. That's what was killing me. He says, what did you do the last time you drank? I told him. He says, you write it down, Rick. I wrote it down. He says, what did you do the time before that? I took, write it down, Rick. He said, I don't care what you think or how you feel. Alcoholism is not a feeling. Alcoholics do not drink because of the way they feel. They drink in spite of it. There's many, many times when I drank and I had no intention of drinking. When I didn't want to drink and I drank anyway. That's powerless. I'm not choosing to drink. The disease is choosing for me. He says, what did you do the time before that? I told him. Write it down. He says, you keep going, Rick, and you write down every single time that you could ever remember picking up a drink in your life. I'm so arrogant. I'm so egotistical. I'm so prideful. My first thought is, man, I'll be writing forever. I was a legend in my own mind. It's, you know, and I could tell you a lot of funny stories about my drink, a lot of sad stuff, make you cry, all that kind of stuff. It's all bullshit. It took me 4 days. I still have the notebooks, about 60 pages. And when I got all done, I sat down and I read every word of it to him. And I thought, you know, and I didn't understand this either. I thought surrender was something I do. He explained to me and he showed me that surrender is not something we do, Rick. It's something that happens to us. This is not surrender. That's compliance. When I read that first step to him, I tell you, it was like I said, we're like men who have lost their legs, they never grow new ones. That's exactly what happened to me. And since that day, since that moment, I have never, ever wanted to drink again. And before that, it's all I thought about. Step two, Rick. I thought the insanity was all the stuff I read to him. He asked me one question. What's the one common denominator in every time that you drank in your life? I always thought he was trying to trick me. You know what I mean? I didn't know the answer. He says, you were sober when you started. That's the insanity of alcoholism, the thought that precedes the first drink. It's too simple for the smart guy. And this is where I ran into problems. I was raised Southern Baptist and Pentecostal. If you don't know anything about that, some serious people. Especially when you're down in Alabama. And they may talk around, they talk funny, flop around on the floor, talk and all that silly shit. I always liked the music, though. But whenever the word God is mentioned in an AA meeting, and it's mentioned a lot, there was a bang, and that's the door of my mind slamming shut. I don't want to hear it. So he gets me on my knees. And he holds my hand just like a little five-year-old. And he has me say this third step prayer, word for word, right out of the big book. And I remember in the middle of it, I'm just turning red as an apple. I'm embarrassed. I'm humiliated. I mean, I'm serious. And I remember standing up. He says, well, how do you feel? I said, it's obvious, you know, I'm embarrassed, and I'm almost ashamed of myself. And I said, well, you know, I'll just fake it till I make it, you know. It's one of the few times that he ever kind of like come up out of his shoes at me, and he says, people who fake it, Rick, never make it. Never make it. Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, works for people who believe in God. It also works for people who do not believe in God. It just doesn't work for people who play God. And if you don't believe, then admit it and say it out loud. Rigorous honesty. I didn't believe a word of it. He says, are you willing? I said, yes, sir, I am. He said, okay. My first inventory, you'll love this. I remember I wrote it all out, and I went over to his house and sat down. He says, Scott, you can leave anything in? No, sir, I did not. I started to read it to him. He says, what is that? It's my inventory. So let me see that. I hand it to him. He starts reading to him. This is really, really good inventory, Rick. It's just not yours. I said, wow. So he sat me down and he showed me how to do a four-step inventory out of the book of AA. And when I was about 9 years sober, my father that I told you about, you ever been to a three-hour speaker meeting? I was getting warmed up now, shit. And make some more coffee. But when my father died, he was buried in Arlington National Cemetery, full military honors. There's a lot of mucky-muck people there. And I'm in dress uniform. I'm so drunk at this funeral in front of all these people that I literally fell in the hole we're going to put him in. You can laugh if you want. It's kind of like that gallows humor. I did. And it was not a happy day for anybody. And needless to say, I was in serious, serious trouble in a lot of ways, but mainly with my family. My mother made it her mission in life that no one would ever speak to me again in my family. In fact, when I was my last tour in Nam, ended up there was I had three of the brothers that were there at the same time, and she pitched a fit about it. She made sure that send the rest of them home and leave me there. It's a story, and she did a good job of it. And for years, they wanted nothing to do with me. I'm sober 9 years, but now I got to. I'm living up north. I got a daughter, a little baby daughter. And I tried on many occasions to make this right. And I told John, I do this. He says, it's not good enough, Rick. You will make it right. And I said, I don't know how to do that. He says, you keep trying. You will make it right. So finally, one day I had my daughter, and I remember she'd made all these little finger paintings, you know, you trace your hand and doing scribbly stuff. And because every time I'd called, they'd hang up. Every time I sent a letter, it came back. So this time I sent her all these pictures and I put somebody else's deal on it. I don't know. And it didn't come back. And I started doing that and sent her all these little scribblies and pictures and stuff. I did that for months. And by now I'm putting my name, and you know, she knows where it's coming from, and I told her so. And finally one day I call her, my mother, and she didn't hang up. And I'd coach my daughter, hi, Grandma, all that kind of stuff, you know. And finally I get the Munchkin on the phone, you know, and she's just squawking. She's not saying anything she's supposed to say. But anyway, I started talking to her, and I did that for months and months. And I'm telling John, I said, I think I got it now. And he says, no, Rick, no. Done nothing. And he says, ask if you can come see her. Direct amends, Rick. I said, okay. So I did. I asked her, would you like, and this is what I did. I'm using my kid the whole time, would you like to see the baby? Of course she wants to see the baby. And so I set it all up, and I flew down to Alabama with the Munchkin, and I think I was there 6 or 7 days, and my second night there, Mary, she'd done stuff with my daughter, and, gave her, put her to bed, and she'd come out, and I'm sitting at the kitchen table, and she sits down, and I'm just so terrified of this woman. Absolutely, I am gut-wrenching, just dying. And I said, Ma, I need to talk to you about something. She goes, what? And I remember I pulled out this letter. It really wasn't the whole man's, kind of like highlights. I wanted to get it started. I said, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and blah. I started getting into it. She says, stop. She says, I don't want to hear it. Oh, man. Now I'm down. I'm just crushed. And so I spent the rest of the time. I actually had a pretty good time. She had a good time with the baby. We come home, and a couple weeks later, I'd sent her took a bunch of pictures. I sent her all these copies of the pictures. I told John what happened. I said, is that enough? I said, you're not done, Rick. You will make this right. I said, what is it I have to do? I've done everything I'm supposed to do here. No, she's done. You've done everything but go to any lengths. He said, send her the letter. I said, you're kidding me. He goes, no, Rick, I'm not. I said, okay. So I sent her all these pictures. I sent her the letter, and remember the following week, I call her up, and I'm talking to her, and now she's talking to the baby, baby's high ground, all that stuff, and she's talking about the pictures, this, that, and the other. She's not mentioning a word about this freaking letter. I'm just dying inside, and I said, did you get the letter, Ma? She goes, yeah, I got it. So, she's not giving it up, Finally, I said, Ma, what did you think of the letter? She says it was well received. The interesting part about that is I actually got sober on my mother's birthday. It wasn't intentional, and she died on her birthday, my 25th sober birthday. And from that moment on, we started going back to family. So it took a while for the rest of my family and aunts and uncles and cousins. It took several years, especially with a couple of my brothers. But it turned out okay. But that's an example of the things that I've had to do since I've been sober. I was living up in Sacramento. I've been back here not quite 3 years. And I'll say this, that the God that I understand today is through the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I never once had God knock a drink out of my hand. God works through the people, Rick. I've never had one experience with God that did not involve another human being. Not once. God's never come, like she said, I've never seen a burn, none of that. And and I've been on my knees, and I've been in a fetal position with tears in my eyes, a snot running on my nose, begging for help, sober a long time, and nothing ever happened until I get up and go talk to that man right there, or him, or her, or somebody. And when I go talk to somebody else in Alcoholics Anonymous, all kinds of stuff would happen to me. January 30th, 5 years ago, my son died. He died of a brain tumor. He dropped dead. One day he's here, the next day he's not. That quick. It really, really train wrecked me. Badly. And that's why I usually wear a hat. I usually wear it backwards. My son always wore a hat backwards. That's why I do that. And it was the people in Alcoholics Anonymous that saved my ass. It was the people in AA that literally did everything that a human being can to save another one. That's how God works in my life. And I'll be eternally grateful. Since that time, I'll tell you a little story. The woman that took me in and helped me when this happened, her son had died in the same hospital in the same day 1 year prior. I'm like, you can't make this shit up. This woman took me in and saved my life, literally saved my life. And a lot of people right here in this town, I turned around, they were there. I was up in Sacramento when this happened, and they were there for me. If you knew, the good news is that Alcoholics Anonymous works. The bad news is that it works slow. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. I wish that I could do half the shit that it says to do half the time. I really do. I am not a sunbeam for Jesus. You know, I'll tell you something. A lot of people know this. I have a lot of fun in Alcoholics Anonymous with drunks. I love AA. I love being sober. I love drunks. These are my people. This is where I belong. And I never fit in anywhere ever in my life till I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And so if you do, this is what they told me to do. You can do what you want. And I'll tell you something. The people that taught me the book and showed me how AA works are the people who wrote the book. I knew three of the first 100 very, very well. And they told me to get this book and to read it. They told me to get a sponsor. Why get a sponsor, Rick? Because if you don't have a sponsor, you have an idiot running your life. And what I call sponsorship, they call codependency now. It's crazy. When I think courting, they call it stalking. Shit's different now, but picky. You said you go to a meeting every single day. Why do you go to a meeting every day? Because people who don't go to meetings don't get to hear about what happens to people who don't go to meetings. Because when they get drunk, and inevitably they always get drunk, they come back and raise your hand, you know, and say the reason they got drunk is because they stopped going to meetings. That's not the truth. They just let a guilt trip on you and me. I ain't buying it. You work the steps. Why do you work the steps? To find a power greater than yourself, Rick. If you're so smart, what are you doing here? And you pass it on. Why do you pass it on? Because if you don't, you will not keep what you have. And every time that I've ever put anything between me and Alcoholics Anonymous, it's removed. Two words. Love and service. That's what I found here. It wasn't what I came here for. What brought me here is one thing. What keeps me here is something completely and totally different. And today, I think my life isn't the way I planned it. But I'll tell you something, I've gotten everything that I've ever wanted or needed in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know what time it is or what I'm supposed to go. I can go for another hour or so. Oh, hell, we got plenty of time, right? I was coaching, you'll like this, Pop Warner football one time. My son was about 10 years old. And I coached him for, he played 3 years. I coached him the first year, 2 years, and he lost every game. And the third year, they fired me and got somebody else, and he still lost every game. So I had a secret thing about yes, you know. They really do suck. And but in the middle of all this, like Pop Warner football, you've been involved in PTA or all that. I didn't know this Pop Warner football. It's kind of like going to an AA business meeting. You ever been to an AA business meeting? I'm serious. People take that shit seriously. You know what I mean? And they fight over 6 or 8 ounce, you know, styrofoam cups. And it's just crazy. But so I don't drink or go to AA business meetings one day at a time. But somebody. The word got out that I was in AA. This bothers me. I hate it when people break my anonymity. It's one of my pet peeves. Nowadays, anonymity is pretty passe, but I'm pretty guarded about it. I don't give it up unless it's going to help somebody. And so they wanted to have this little chat with me. I said, okay, so I go there. Saturday afternoon, I walk in a high school gymnasium. They got a little table set up, you know, like one of those. And there's four of them sitting, like this panel, this judge panel or something. I don't know. And I'm so pissed off about the fact somebody broke my anonymity. At the AA convention, the T-shirt looks like a big book. It says Alcoholics Anonymous on it. I wore that shirt. Now I'm pissed. I'm going to show these people. I walk in. I sit down. And they said, are you an alcoholic? I said, it's much worse than that. What do you mean? I said, I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, it's much worse than that. I said, all of my friends are in AA too. I said, it's even worse than that. I said, my son was raised in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, Alcoholics Anonymous is what keeps my feet on the ground, is what keeps me going in one direction, it keeps my head straight, my heart pure. It's given me everything that I have inside and out. I don't have a problem with it. If you do, I don't know what to tell you. And I left. Maybe that's why they fired me. I don't know. But I did a book study, an AA book study, for 18 years. When I started this book study, my son was real little. And he just started kindergarten and first grade and all that. And I remember I used to, he'd come home from school and I used to always say, what'd you do in school today? All that stuff, blah, blah, blah. I couldn't ever. I said, what's the first thing a teacher says to you when you go to school? He says, good morning, class. So he went to that book study when he sat with me, right next to me, for 12 years. He kind of, you know, grew up, and he said, you know, yeah, but by the time he left, or kind of he got a little better at doing other stuff, but I had half the meeting done. It was homework for him every week and all that kind of shit. And true story, but every Wednesday night, 6 o'clock, he would always start the meeting with, good evening, class. So whenever I talk at an A meeting, I always say, good evening, class. That's why I do that. And I miss him a lot. And if you're new tonight, when I came to AA, I had absolutely no other place to go. None. I'd burnt every bridge. I'd wrecked my life and the life of anybody who had any contact with me around me. That's the way I was. And after I got sober, like I told you, it was not a pretty sight for a while until I did what it says on the wall. And once that happened, I changed. I changed. I found a power greater than myself. The first word and the first step is we, Rick. I cannot do this on my own. And y'all got a lot of better belief and strength and hope and faith in this God than I will ever have. And but it's the people in AA that do it for me. And it's where I belong, and it's where I'm going to stay. Thank you again, whoever asked me to talk, the convention people, the committee, or I don't know who the hell it was. But I actually turned down La Jolla speakers to come here. Chuck says, you're not going to speak here? No, I don't want to speak here. Your wife said, I don't like you and I don't like your goddamn meeting either. And you know, they call you, got that haughty attitude. Well, this is La Jolla. I don't give a shit what it is. It's still an A meeting. One requirement for membership out there, I think, is own a swimming pool or some shit. But we don't judge here, by the way. We just, you know. If you hear that one, you're near, they're lying to you. Really. We judge everybody and everything, trust me. So anyway, thank you again.